Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon. Woody says the life and music of Woody Guthrie is in a good long run at the Milwaukee Rep Stackner Cabaret. It's on right now and goes through March 9. And two of the devisers and actors in the show are with us this hour. One of the devisers wrote in the playbill for the show, Woody Guthrie is America's best known, important, influential, obscure protest folk song writer. Most folks don't know his name or his story, but many recognize his songs. A man very much of his time and place. He wrote over, which is, I find unbelievable, 1,000 songs. And we'll talk about that, songs, the life of this man, and the performance, which is now taking place at the Stackner Cabaret. Two guests with us in our studio in Milwaukee here to join us is David Lutkin. And David is playing Woody Guthrie in Woody Says. He received the 2013 Helen Hayes Award and Joseph Jefferson Awards for Best Actor, studied at London's Webber Douglas Academy of Dramatic Arts, has performed in Europe, Israel, the United Kingdom, Lincoln Center, the 92nd Street Y, Carnegie Hall, and I'm sure his favorite has been being in Milwaukee this week when it's been darn cold. His West End debut was with Woody Says. He's performed on Broadway, Off-Broadway, Regional Theater. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much for having us. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Love the performance. You really inhabited, I think, who we think this person was, and it's obvious that you've studied him pretty completely.
Well, thank you. I've read an awful lot about him.
Yeah, yep. I would imagine you have. Also joining us is Helen Jean Russell, co-deviser of Woody Says, and she plays Woody's mother in many other roles. She's also a very accomplished singer, and she plays fiddle and other instruments. She has produced variety shows featuring the City Singers, an a cappella choir that she co-founded. She was part of Woody Says' 2007 debut in Edinburgh. It'll be interesting to hear how foreign audiences respond to Woody if he speaks to the world. And also, she's been in subsequent tours throughout the UK, Israel, and Europe, and at the debut at the Lyric Theater of Oklahoma. She works as an actor, musical director, publishing technology consultant, and her debut CD, Holly Days, was released in 2008. She's at work on a second. Thank you very much. You go by Helen Jean or Helen?
Just Helen's fine.
Just Helen's fine. Thank you, Helen,
Thank
so much
you.
For being with us. I really enjoyed the show so much, and part of what I liked about it, you're all very accomplished performers, but there's something that's just very natural about this show. You don't feel as though you were nervous when you were getting on stage. It was the opening night of your being in Milwaukee, a new audience, but there was something really comfortable about everything that was done, which I appreciated. And it also made me think that's probably somewhat like Woody Guthrie. You'd be pretty comfortable to be around him, perhaps.
Well, that depends on your point of view. Woody was actually kind of a prickly character.
Was he?
In many ways. But I do believe that you are correct that musically speaking, he was he and all of his sort of compatriots, Pete Seeger and Lefty Lou from Old Mizzou and all those kinds of folks were I guess the easiest word is folksy, and he started off on the radio in California during the Okie days in the late 1930s so his style on the radio and his public persona playing music were certainly very, very welcoming.
Mm-hmm. Helen, his early life, and you play his mother, what a tortured soul she was. Mm-hmm. There are parts of his life that just make you gasp that yeah. he had to live through that. And oh, my gosh, just gut-wrenching, really. Can you talk a little bit about those early years and what influence they may have had on him? You play his mother in the show.
I do. Well, I'm not really the resident expert on the history, but I have recently gotten to know a young woman that we met in Cleveland who has Huntington's disease in her family, and she gave me some of the interesting details of what it is to watch someone evolve through the disease, and it's a slow disintegration. It's very sad to say that, mm-hmm. but that's what it is, and We see that in the show. We see that she is setting fires, and the children aren't safe anymore. And Woody just kind of takes off to see the world and leave that sadness behind, and continues to find tragedy throughout his entire trip back and forth across the United States. When he goes to Europe, he's during the war, he continues observing and playing his music and tries to interpret all of that into his life work. So the mother is just one of the tragedies that he experiences. It's really a cool story, how he seems to, and I think the show too seems to go through all of that tragedy, but it comes out making you feel pretty good about continuing on and keeping a stiff upper lip and a good feeling about living your life.
Yeah, it's amazing he was able to do that and to live in such a full way, considering the enormity of some of the tragedies.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Huntington's disease is as Helen says, is quite a terrible thing. And the Huntington's Disease Society of America, which has been active now since it was founded by Woody's second wife, Marjorie, not too long after his death from Huntington's disease, which he inherited from his mother. I think it's sort of doubly significant in his life, because as an artist and a songwriter, he found that I believe in my observation of his many, many thousands of songs, that quite often he brings his own personal difficulties as a sort of a lens through which to not so much to see but to show other people the difficulties of the world and the common man and why it is that everybody should pull together for the the good of everybody.
Mm-hmm. I was interested, I think it was John Steinbeck's comments about Woody's songs, that John spent all this time writing these novels looking at some of the same human condition, and Woody could write about it in one song.
Well, that's the one of the famous quotes, I guess, is that John Steinbeck said, "Woody, you son of a gun,
right?
You wrote my whole novel in 17 verses about the Grapes of Wrath, so, in the Ballad of Tom Joad."
But there is something about that. When I listened to all of the songs, and you made me listen to more as a result of seeing the show, he did do that. He did write some ballads. He did write some history lessons for us, children's songs, songs of the times. He was able to incorporate a lot in a short
Well,
song.
Absolutely. And I think that's why he has come down, as I so awkwardly said in my little essay there, that he is a very famous, even though he is kind of obscure in the United States, he is pretty famous because he was one of the greatest at really distilling the sentiments and the wisdom and the stupidity and the politics and the cover-ups and even, as you say, things like the weather, down to incredible poetic philosophy in his songs.
And people often ask us, how does this translate when you go abroad? And that's why it does. We all experience globally the exact same problems. Wherever we go, it seems like there are union issues, or there are political problems, or there are weather problems, or there's depression, or there's poverty. Wherever we go, it just seems that the people come out and they really do understand the universal problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, this calls for a song. Ha. So give us one that has to do with the universal problem, your choice.
Well, all right. That's a pretty good segue. That's why you're the radio lady. This is a song that, we can talk about a little after it's over, maybe. I ain't got no home, I'm just a ramblin' round. I work when I can get it, I roam from town to town. The police make it hard, boys, wherever I may go. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. I'm minding your minds. Yes, I've gathered in your corn. I've been a working mister since the day that I was born. I worry all the time now like I never did before. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. Well, I'm stranded on this road that runs from sea to sea. 100,000 others are stranded here with me. 100,000 others, yes, and 100,000 more. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. So now I'm bound to ramble round just to see what I can see. It's a wide, wicked world, and it don't make much sense to me. The gambling man is rich, and the working man is poor. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. I ain't got no home in this world anymore.
Yay. Very nice. What's the name of it?
It's called I Ain't Got No Home.
It does.
We just do three or four verses, but it actually has about 10 or 12, anyway, that I can vaguely remember. But those, I hope, are sort of representative of the time he was writing about, when all the Okies were moving from Oklahoma and Arkansas and Texas and everywhere else, headed out to California. And they got to California, and there was not a lot for them there either. And so that was kind of how Woody thought to represent himself, in addition to, in great measure, how he lived, that he did travel all the time and was always very restless, even when he was settled down in places for periods of time.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't easy to travel around in those days, I would imagine, particularly on nothing. One of the songs or one of the commentaries is about driving in this old car, you know, which they have to get to the thug in order to get some food or promise of work, and then that falls through. But what a difficult thing to do.
Jumping the rails.
Yeah. Well, so why did he do that? He also had to look at the darker side of who he was. I mean, he had some responsibilities. He had some children. He had different wives. And I guess he was known to just sort of get up and go.
That's right. Well, they used to say that he said he was going to go buy cigarettes, and 3 weeks later he came back. But that's an interesting psychological conundrum that he did. He had three wives and a total of eight children.
Oh my!
And this is one of those things that we know of. He was constantly on the move. I mean, even not too long after he was first married, of course, some of these things had a good deal of logic behind them. Not too long after he got married, the Dust Bowl was crushing everybody in North Texas, where he was living, in Pampa, Texas. And so he went to California to try to find something. And in fact, he did. He got on the radio, and he did pretty well. And as he said, he saved up a bunch of money and sent back home for Mary and his wife and their two little girls. And they came out to California, and they had a pretty good time there for a while. And then he kind of got associated with some other folks, like Will Gear and a fellow named Ed Robbins, who got him a job writing for the communist newspaper. And through influences in California, he was introduced to sort of the left-wing literati in New York City. And so he went to New York City, and over her own, saner thoughts, Mary followed him to New York City with the girls, and they moved again, but it was always he was just a restless fellow, you know, and. They split up not too long after that. Mary decided that this was kind of crazy, and they had gone in 1941. He got the commission from the Bonneville Power Administration out in Oregon, and they all went out there. And he had a very famous couple of months out there where it was probably his most prolific time. And he was doing, on the one hand, he was doing brilliant work, And on the other hand, he was neglecting his wife and family, and
right.
he failed to make any payments on his car, which was repossessed. And they, and so they just decided, look, we're going home. So they went home to Texas. And so, but that restlessness certainly plagued him and also made his life and his art what it is.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit, if there is a difference, if you see a strong difference between what is obvious to a lot of people now, that he was a genius in many ways. He was a very complicated man and a very brilliant man in lots of ways. But we saw this public persona of him, you know, being an Okie, being kind of a simple guy of the people. There was much more to this person, wasn't there? Not that there's anything wrong with being a simple person, but there was a lot of layers to him.
Well, I think that's true. I also think it's an interesting sort of a stew of a guy, really, that all these elements were, in a way, separate, but in another way, not. That we've done this show now for 6 or 7 years.
Oh, my.
In all different parts of the United States and all in several places around the world, and have had a wonderful time, and everyone has their spectacular reactions, both pro and con and everywhere in between, and we always enjoy it. And I had a lady down in Florida after the show, and we had a hootenanny after the show, which we
you're
do
doing
every
here
week.
Too. I think
yes,
that's great.
That's right. We
tonight,
start tonight.
Yeah,
as a matter
good.
Of fact.
Good. Okay.
And we had a hootenanny, and in Florida, of course, unlike Milwaukee, in Florida, our hootenannies were out on the sidewalk. we're not going to do that in Milwaukee.
No.
But we were down there, you know, banging away, playing outside, and having a great old time. And of course, it was also Florida, so everybody there was 105 years old. And having a wonderful time and playing and singing, and they knew all the words to everything. And this one lady wanted to talk to me, and we kept on going for a little while, and she asked something again until finally, after everybody had left, she was still sitting there with a gentleman next to her. And so I had packed everything up, and I went over, and she was determined to talk to me. And she was a widow, and this was her brother that she was with. And her husband had been a guitar player in New York City back in the 1940s, I guess, and had played, apparently, with Woody Guthrie. And was a young man, probably, I guess, she seemed to say something like, you know, 17 or 18 years old. And she wanted me to know, in her very thick Queens accent, that there was a big difference between the public persona and the person of Woody Guthrie, that he apparently had not been very nice to her husband, the guitar player. And so I said, well, yes, ma'am, I that's evident many times over, and I've had an awful lot of people tell me how wonderful he was, and an awful lot of people tell us how, you know, he was not very nice. And what I hope we managed to do in the show, to try to bring my rambling here to some sort of a point, is to show a little bit of that. I mean, it's impossible to do everything, but I want to try to show the fact that there was the public guy and there was the private guy, and the private guy certainly didn't always do the right thing, and the public guy didn't do the right thing all the time either. And one was not necessarily the puppet of the other, that he was a complicated fella to himself, and he had a great deal of difficulty with his personal relationships and his sense of responsibility, and a very, very difficult and complex and complicated relationship with his mother.
Poor mother.
Who died, of course, when he was very young.
Yeah.
But still, it ran through his life as a kind of a theme, I think, to him and in some of his music, most notably, I believe, the Ballad of Tom Joad, which is, of course, an awful lot of that is about Tom Joad and his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those things I've tried to keep them all at the forefront as much as possible during the during our presentation.
And before we go to phone calls, let me ask both of you, because you have been doing, you've been involved in this music and this show for, I mean, it's not just a year, it's for a long period of time. So there must be something, and let's start with you, Helen, on this, about Woody, about the importance of keeping these songs front and center, and something compelling as an actress and as a musician that makes you want to spend so much time with him. So what is it?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. The first thing that came to my mind was the ensemble. There's two other people. In this version, we have David Finch and Lena Rideout. And then we just said goodbye to our director, Nick Corley. And working with those five people and traveling around the world, and we get to make music. It's fresh music every night. You never know what's going to come out. And that makes it really fun.
Well, you have a vague idea of what's going to come.
Well, that's true. But the music has not been written down. It's really coming from the individuals. And yes, David's right that we do have a general floor plan. But that's really, I think, what makes it fun is that it's different every night. But Woody, I'm as I get older, I'm starting to understand just how profound his work was. As a kid, I learned the music, and it was just kind of, you know, it's another song, but especially as we travel around the world and see, again, see that the global issues, I'm amazed at how simple his words were, and yet they mean so much. And I feel this every night. I've done the show just about every time it's ever gone up, and we were counting out in the lobby here that I think we're going to be, after this run, I think we may go past 500. Is that an exaggeration? But no. Every single night I hear something new and different. Mm-hmm. And the making of the music is it's always the best for me.
And you, David?
Oh, gosh. Well, started with Mrs. Eichmeier when I was 3 years old in nursery school, learning a few Woody Guthrie songs, and, you know, Go Tell Aunt Rhody the Old Gray Goose Is Dead, and,
sure.
And riding on the dummy line, and a few thousand other songs like that. And I began playing at a very early age. I have older brothers and a sister, and they all play. And so when I got to be about 7 years old, somebody handed me the mandolin, and I started from there. And we all played in a family band and everything.
Oh, nice.
And Woody Guthrie was always in there. He was not a major character any more than somebody like Uncle Dave Macon or Gordon Lightfoot, or, you know, people like that to growing up in the 60s. But when I got into the theater, after I went to the Webber Douglas Academy of Dramatic Arts in London, and acting and playing at the same time, Woody Guthrie's life, really, through a very long series of other shows and other people and various influences, Woody Guthrie's life seemed to me at the perfect subject for the theater, because it is such a difficult thing. Now, I'm not saying that Woody Says is the perfect show about Woody Guthrie's life, but we've done our best, and I hope it's something that people can take home with them, that they'll be able to chew on and think about and sing along to.
Yeah. It grabs people from all generations. That's what's amazing to me. And when we were in Edinburgh, we had this like little mini goth following, you know, of you know, these kids with their black eyes and the crazy wardrobe. And then we also had the Scottish, you know, the generation just above us, our parents' generation, that would sit in the audience and weep. Yeah. I mean, it's just so profound how it goes all the way across the we have people that bring their grandchildren, and the little teeny ones like it too, you know. So that's amazing to me. And also, you know, I also come from a musical family. My mom was a music school teacher, and my family made music, and it's just it's a good gig. I got to tell you, it's hard to call it a job, but
it gets to be a job.
But.
All right, well, think about, maybe we should do, we have to pause for a moment, but coming back, let's do This Land Is Your Land, because it is one of those songs that everybody knows this song.
Sure.
Why do we know this song? And we want to hear some of the verses that we don't know as well. So we'll do that in just a moment. And we want to welcome our audience to join the conversation as well. The show has just opened last week. The official opening night was Sunday, so I don't know how many of you. And then it was so cold, so I don't know if you've had a chance to see it. But many of you in the audience will be familiar with the life and the music of Woody Guthrie, so you can join in with your comments about his music. And if you've seen the show, we'd love to know what you thought about it, too. Woody Says, the life and music of Woody Guthrie, is right now at the Milwaukee Rep Stackner Cabaret. It goes through March 9. David Ludkin is playing Woody. He's the musical director and one of the devisors of the show is with us. Helen Jean Russell is a co-devisor of the program, and she plays a variety of roles and instruments in the show. So did I give you the number? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to go there, that would be okay, is the Kathleen Dent Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water, this land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. In the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people as they stood there hungry. I stood there wondering, is this land made for you and me? This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water, this land was made for you and me. Well, I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. And all around me, a voice was sounding, saying this land was made for you and me. There was a big high wall there, and it tried to stop me. And on the sign it said, private property. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. This land was made for you and me. This land was made for you and me.
Very nice. Thank you. So why don't we hear those verses very often?
Oh, gosh. Well, I imagine it's for a couple of reasons. Woody's old manager was a fellow named Harold Leventhal. And Harold was a good friend of mine and a very nice fellow. And he was the publisher of many of Woody's songs and his lyrics. And he, as we said before, he wrote approximately 1,000 songs. Well, actually, he wrote a good bit more than that of lyrics that to which there was really no music except perhaps in his own head.
Hmm.
But when many of those songs came out, The Ballad of Tom Joad and I Ain't Got No Home and quite a few of those, they had many, 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 many verses. And when he recorded for Alan Lomax, the Library of Congress, and various other times, he didn't always sing all the verses. And he always kept making up more verses. Well, This Land Is Your Land was written, and there's a very interesting recent book that has come out about the song, This Land Is Your Land. written by, what the heck is that fella's name? I can't remember it now. He's a Grammy Museum guy. Yeah. I should remember. I'm sorry, but I'll, maybe I'll think of it later.
Somebody might remember for you.
But thank you. They probably will. But it's a very good book and a very interesting book. He wrote it in 1940, right after he first came to New York. Just about, I guess it was in February the something. February the 23rd, I think it is, 1940. And he actually did write some of those verses that I just that we just sang, a couple of them in a little different form. The one about that says, "In the shadow of the steeple, I saw my people. By the relief office, I saw my people." And then it, that kind of got abbreviated later to the way that, that we were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, a, as many people know, it was a, it began as a kind of a comeback to the song "God Bless America," which was hugely popular at that time, and I think kind of driving Woody a little crazy because it was playing on the radio all the time. And he didn't really agree with this, what he perceived as the sentiment of the song, that that God was on our side and everything was great. And he thought it was the – he thought it was sort of the wrong direction. He wanted everybody to rely a little bit more on each other and see the problems and try to help to fix things. Now, I don't I'm speaking for Woody Guthrie now, so everybody can get mad at me if you like. But that's sort of how I see what he said.
Yeah.
But the song, when it began to be a regular part of his repertoire, which was a few years later, actually, he didn't really write much about it to begin with after he wrote it. He was still singing other tunes that, that were part of the Dust Bowl Ballads collection, and also the songs that he wrote for the, about the Grand Coulee Dam. That was a hugely prolific period that we just talked about a minute ago. "This Land Is Your Land" sort of crept into his repertoire a little bit later, and it was only 4 or 5 years after the fact that he began to include it on his set lists and things. And so I'm not really sure when he did that what verses he was including. I do know that when Mr. Leventhal first published the song, it was a version that Woody was pretty commonly singing, and that it did not include the private property verse or the shadow of the steeple verse. I believe it was because, and this is I'm putting words in Mr. Leventhal's mouth, I believe it is because he and Pete Seeger were focusing on publishing a lot of these songs for curricula, for schools.
Oh.
And therefore, they it wasn't that they didn't want to be political. It was that they didn't want to be too pointedly political.
Right. Right.
And very soon after that, of course, it got recorded by many people, including up to and including Bing Crosby in 1964, I think
it was.
But so I don't – I'm not sure. I can't speak for everybody as to how pointed were the omissions to begin with, because I do know that I, that those verses – I have known about those the three verses that Arlo talks about.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is – the Nobody Living verse, I guess, that I've known about those verses for a very long time. So I don't really think anybody was keeping them from me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think they did get left out a lot.
Let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. And Arnie in Madison is our first caller. Hi, Arnie.
Yes. I wonder if your guests have heard of or performed the Italian Hall disaster 1913 event that Woody commemorated in 1941. And just a bit of background on it, the copper miners of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan were engaged in a strike in 1913, and the Ladies Auxiliary of the Western Federation of Miners organized a Christmas Eve party for the wives and children of the miners in the Italian Hall, which occurred on the second floor of that building. And during the time when it was occurring on Christmas Eve, somebody yelled from below on the street, "Fire!"
Oh.
And 73 people were trampled to death in their effort to get out of the hall, and there was no fire. And of those 73, 59 were 57, I believe, were children. So it's one of the great tragedies of the Midwest that we don't hear much about, but Woody did commemorate it. And I might add that just a couple of weeks ago on Christmas Eve, there was a very large commemorative service in Calumet where they read the names of all of the victims and had a very somber event that occurred.
Thank you very much. That it is an event in history that's not very well noted. Are you familiar with it?
Oh, yes. That's quite a famous song, and Woody, I'm sure, would be very happy to know that there is a there continues to be a commemorative service for the victims. But, yes, it's quite a beautiful song of his. And I hate to tell you that it's not in the show, but...
Well, you couldn't have all of them. He did over 1,000.
That's very true, but it is a great song, and he wrote quite a few like that were very specific, very topical songs in the time. Sacco and Vanzetti, and he wrote a song about the sinking of the Reuben James, my great favorite, I'll tell you, is also not in the show. My favorite Woody Guthrie song of them all is Pretty Boy Floyd.
Oh, yes.
Which deals with a little bit different problem. But there's some really wonderful songs, and I certainly hope that that folks who are listening in will look up some of these things and see all of the subjects that Woody tried to tackle. And in some cases, like that one, he really did a terrific and a very memorable job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the call, Arnie. Let's go to Ted in Mequon. Hi, Ted.
Hi. I wanted to make a comment. I'm 20 years old, so I remember being back in elementary school, back in hometown, and I remember being in choir and standing next to a bunch of my friends, and we would learn This Land Is Your Land, This Land Is My Land, and we'd learn all these songs, and it was in the colonialism unit, and I just remember having a warmest feeling in my body and understanding that, you know, that all these issues that he brings up, he's very good about drawing the lines in between people, but he's also good about, I think, bringing the right emotion and bringing the right, you know, angle into how he plays these things and how he kind of analyzes it on the backside. Mm-hmm. That's just my comment on things.
So you're a young fan now, huh?
Yes. I started listening on Pandora Radio, so I'd kind of gotten into, like, big band and kind of older, you know, 20s music. And kind of through that, I was introduced to Woody Guthrie. And I don't know, it just kind of sparked with me, you know. There's a certain type of joviality with Woody Guthrie. And his voice is just reminds me of someone telling a tale by the fire.
Right. Yeah. Oh, he tells tales. And some of the songs, he did children's songs as well. Some of them were, you know, not the big issues of the day. The car song was wildly popular. Still is,
sure,
really.
Sure, sure. I learned it when I was 3.
Did you really?
Yeah. Hmm. And during his second marriage in particular, his wife Marjorie and Woody wrote hundreds of children's songs. You know, Put Your Finger in the Air and Sleep Eye and Clean-O and all kinds of just wonderful things about, as you say, about just, you know, goofing off. And he was quite the goof off in many respects. And that was his particular. He did go through sort of periods of writing different kinds of things, and certainly his children's song period was quite prolific.
Mm-hmm. Well, I almost wondered as I saw the performance, or maybe this was your take on it, that he wrote those songs and performed them for his children because he was rarely there. So they associated their dad with these great songs that they could sing along with. You could just see the anticipation. Daddy, Daddy, sing this song for us. It was their tie to him.
That's true. And he would go through times when he was, as you say, when he was not there, but he also went through times when he was nothing but there. He would come home and he didn't have any money and didn't have anything to do, so he just hung around all day with the kids, you know. I would have to ask Nora and your old friend Arlo about it. But it certainly was They lived out near Coney Island, and I get the feeling it was kind of a roller coaster ride.
I bet it was, yeah. Let's go to David in Waukegan. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've always enjoyed folk and country songs, and I'm in my late 50s, kind of grew up with Johnny Cash songs and Merle Haggard and Hank Sr. And then I just learned about 10 years ago about Woody Guthrie, and I was wondering, did Arlo, his son, get to play with him much in the music industry? And where does Ramblin' Jack Elliott come in? Because I've seen him perform on a video.
Right. Well, yes, Woody and Arlo played together some when Arlo was a little boy. But by the time Arlo really got to hitting on all six, Woody at that time was in the hospital. He went into the hospital in the late 50s, pretty much for good, and he was there for about the last 10 years of his life until he died in 1967. But Arlo was certainly in and around during that time and making his way in the music business, by the way, with Harold Leventhal as his manager to begin with. Ramblin' Jack is probably, I would say, one of the more famous of the Woody Guthrie disciples who began playing with him during the 1950s, and as far as I know, is still out there.
Yeah, just saw him down in Austin.
Oh, well, there you go. But he's great. I've played with him. It's been a long time now since I was on the stage with Mr. Elliott. But he's a rambling guy. He's a pretty wild character, and I think he has succeeded in many ways in his efforts to take up the cudgel where Woody left off.
So. Thank you so much, David, for your call. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655. Talk at WPR.org or go to the Kathleen Dunn Facebook page. While we're pausing for just a moment, think about what you want, and we'll come back in with another song and then talk about that and take more phone calls. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, another song before we go to phone calls. You want to set it up?
Sure.
All right.
This is a song that we mentioned a minute ago. It's called The Sinking of the Reuben James. Have you heard of a ship called the Good Reuben James? Manned by hard fighting men, both of honor and fame. She flew the stars and stripes of this land of the free. But tonight she's in her grave at the bottom of the sea.
Well, 100 men went down in that dark and watery grave. When that good ship went down, only 44 were saved. 'Twas the last day of October that they saved the 44 from the cold ocean water and that cold Iceland shore.
Tell me what were their names? Tell me what were their names? Did you have a friend on the good Reuben James? What were their names? Tell me what were their names? Did you have a friend on the good Reuben James?
It was there in the dark of that uncertain night that we watched for the U-boats and waited for a fight. Then a whine and a rock and a great explosion rolled and laid the Reuben James on that cold ocean floor.
Now tonight there are lights in our country so bright. On the farms and in the cities, they're telling of this plight. And now our mighty battleships will steam the bounding main and remember the name of that good Reuben James.
Tell me what were their names? Tell me what were their names? Did you have a friend on the good Reuben James? What were their names? Tell me what were their names? Did you have a friend on the good Reuben James?
Mm. Yeah, that's a memorable song. That one will last for a long, long time. You have a voice that's just sort of made for this kind of music. Don't you think that of yourself at times?
Yeah,
it's
actually,
so clear. You hear all the words and it's
kind of
it's lovely. Yeah, both very talented. Let's go to Cindy in Appleton next. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. You played the song earlier, I Ain't Got No Home in This World Anymore. And the woman that accompanied him has just this hauntingly beautiful voice. Do you know who that was and how long she was with him?
She's right here with us.
Oh, she is.
Yeah, this is live. No, this is not Woody singing. Although you know he could pass himself off
best,
as Woody, right? So tell us about you, Helen.
Well, you know that's very kind of you.
That
My
was
gosh,
nice.
I'm blushing in here. You know, I kind of discovered later in my life, I'm in my late 50s, and I discovered later on that everybody couldn't sing. I didn't really consider it a gift because everybody I knew could sing. I came from a musical town, a musical family, and that's very flattering, and thank you very much.
Yeah, very nice. Thanks very much for the call. Gary in Marble, Minnesota. Hi, Gary.
Afternoon. I read the biography, Bound for Glory.
Mm-hmm.
That Woody had a disease called Huntington's disease.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if they know when it started to affect him and how much it affected everything that he did as far as his writing and his personal life is concerned.
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I'm glad you asked it. Huntington's disease, you know, is a hereditary disease. And Woody inherited it from his mother, who died from it, and eventually so did he. And they first detect symptoms generally in middle age. And indeed, Woody was about 40 when it was diagnosed that he had Huntington's disease, but it began to affect him before that. And he was something of a drinking man, and so I think a lot of people, and even he did to a little bit of an extent, they blamed it on his drinking to begin with, but then it became obvious that it was, in fact, Huntington's, which is a degenerative disease of the nervous system. And the symptoms, as I understand it, include a loss of motor control. There's a picture of his family when he was a little boy, and his mother is in the background and has her hands clasped behind her back. And I've been told by more than one doctor in the audience that that is a typical thing for Huntington's sufferers to do early in the disease, is they put their hands behind their back or they cross their arms because they're afraid that otherwise their arm will fly out and do something uncontrollable. And other things, as their mind and their nervous system begins to deteriorate, some people have the symptom of flying into a rage or not being able to control their facial muscles and having these sort of tortured expressions on their faces. And so it's a very difficult thing. And I believe that it did have an effect on his writing and his work and his poetry from an early time that may or may not be true or may not be detectable. But later in his life, he apparently, when he spoke, he began to put a Y sound like, Kathleen-y.
Really?
He would put a Y on the end of the sentence.
Hmm.
And then it would progress, and he would put a Y on the end of every word.
Hmm.
Talking-y, about-y, having-y, some watery.
Mm.
So it does very strange things to your nervous system. And I'd love to find out more about it from people who really know.
Hmm.
But it was a tough thing for him. and defined the certainly the last 15 years mm-hmm. of his life.
And I know that you are doing at your Hootenannies, you're selling CDs, mm-hmm. which are lovely, and then a portion of the CD will go for
to the Huntington's Disease Society of America,
which is good. Thank you both so much for being with us. A nice long run here in Milwaukee, where eventually it's going to be just so warm and lovely.
We're looking forward to the flowers.
I bet you are. And the Hootenannies are on Thursday nights
yep.
Thursday after
night.
The show. Well, it's a terrific show. Thank you for keeping him alive. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Thanks for having us.
Our guest this hour, David Ludkin. He plays Woody Guthrie and is one of the people who put the whole show together, received the 2013 Helen Hayes Award and Joseph Jefferson Award for Best Actor for this performance. We also thank Helen Jean Russell, who is the co-developer of Woody Says. She plays Woody's mother a variety of instruments and has just a beautiful voice. The show is at the Milwaukee Rep Stackner Cabaret, and it goes on now through March 9. Thanks to KP Whaley for production and on-air production. We'll be with you again on Monday.